Imagine you finally have a free day out on the town. You're about to enjoy a nice lunch when you get the alert that a window's been broken at home and you're miles away. These are the wake-up calls that remind us, in 1 second, everything can change. ADT security systems are built for those moments. They help keep your home safer with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home or vulnerable when you're away. And with ADT, you won't. Their systems are professionally installed by trained technicians, so you can trust them to watch out for your home from day one. ADT has the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry, and the ADT Plus app lets you keep tabs on your home from anywhere you have service. You'll get the alerts that matter about your home safety. Don't wait to prepare your home for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. Or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. That's 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
The pressure on data centers has never been greater. Whether you're expanding capacity, supporting AI workloads, or building new facilities, Graybar works alongside you with the solutions, specialists, and logistics expertise you need today. We help you power performance every step of the way, so your operation is ready now. Yep, Graybar does that.
Just having two teams that don't like each other, like, that's great for sports. Add the whole college element of it all, I don't.
Think about it as an Ole Miss fan this year. Like, you get Lane Kiffin's return, you get Georgia coming back, Mississippi State's in Oxford this year. You've got Auburn there. It's a pretty good season ticket package.
That's the other thing is, like, I think this is the real question. I would bump this higher on Chip's list, but I know Chip's thought about it probably more than I have. Cobb, what happens to playoff discussion when the SEC is going to have, let's say, 5-9-3 teams?
Well, maybe that'll be the impetus for Greg Sankey to say, we're going to 24, ESPN be danged. Like,
I can't see him doing that, man.
If enough of his teams get left out, the pressure from within will be
okay,
too great.
What's worth more money? Your ESPN television deal, or if it expands to 24, what, three more playoff teams?
Pretty significant.
But that's still a massive gap. I mean, ESPN's basically paying what? Close to $1 billion a year?
Well, why don't we revisit the idea then of, because I understand the discourse. It's basically, the SEC doesn't want to sign off on a 24-team playoff because doing so would forsake the SEC championship game, which is a huge moneymaker for the league. A lot of contractual obligations there, not to mention the history of it, being the pioneers of it and all that. Well, why is the idea no longer being discussed of games between teams from the SEC being staged to, like, decide who gets into the playoff, right? Because that was a thing we were talking about for a while there, where it's like, well, why don't you have your fifth and your sixth team play during championship week to determine which one gets your conference's final playoff spot? Well, now that's both, right? Then you do have meaningful postseason conference action, maybe not a conference championship game, but a very compelling, meaningful television product that then feeds into the playoff. Like, that's, then you kind of have both. Like, why is that not being discussed?
I don't know, because I think SEC presidents expected the SEC championship game air quotes, to be expanded more so than like what everybody's talking about of it going away. And the expansion being, like you said, maybe it's not one versus two, but it's having back-to-back, you know, maybe one play-in game Saturday morning and one play-in game Saturday night, or maybe one's on Friday night and the other Saturday mid-afternoon.
SEC play-in Saturday, like session one at noon, session two at 7:30, like, you know.
I don't know, but I mean, when you start working the numbers, man, I don't think the championship game's going away. Did you see Petiti's number yesterday?
With respect to like the Big Ten championship game?
No, he said the four combined are $200 million. Now, that's not $50 million.
The SEC, though, is probably 100 of that.
I would think if not 100, at least 80.
Yeah. And so but what is the expanded playoff then?
He even acknowledged it. It's going to be a lot like we just saw with NCAA tournament expansion. Just because you're expanding does not, like, he's like, the revenue is not going to be massive.
So at that point, you start to understand Greg Sankey's reasoning more, because if the money doesn't add up, there's no point.
And I do think it's a little disingenuous, because also the real reason why he is doing it is because ESPN doesn't want to take the thing to market. And I get that.
But that's probably why Petiti's pushing so hard for expansion.
It's a cold war. I've been screaming about this for years. What's actually happening is not this Big Ten versus SEC thing. It's ESPN, Disney versus Fox.
Yeah.
And that's what it's always been.
We've given the keys to the castle to the networks.
Correct. All right, let's take a break. The list is coming up next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Imagine you finally have a free day out on the town. You're about to enjoy a nice lunch when you get the alert that a window's been broken at home and you're miles away. These are the wake-up calls that remind us, in 1 second, everything can change. ADT security systems are built for those moments. They help keep your home safer with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home or vulnerable when you're away. And with ADT, you won't. Their systems are professionally installed by trained technicians, so you can trust them to watch out for your home from day one. ADT has the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry, and the ADT Plus app lets you keep tabs on your home from anywhere you have service. You'll get the alerts that matter about your home safety. Don't wait to prepare your home for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. Or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. That's 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Graybar, we know your time is money. That's why our services go beyond parts and products. With kitting, pre-assembly, wire carts, and Graybar smart reels that keep you moving. We stage materials and manage logistics so you can spend less time sorting and more time installing. And with locations nationwide, we deliver when and where you need it, working to make your job easier every step of the way. Yep, Graybar does that.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less.
Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's maintain in the letter X.com/AI.
Leaders Credit Union has called West Tennessee home for nearly 70 years, and they want you to know that they are dedicated to strengthening the community because Leaders believes that together we can all make a difference. As a local not-for-profit financial institution, Leaders reinvest their profits back into their members and the community by offering low rates on loans, high rates on deposits, investing in technology, and giving back to the community. Right now, if you're thinking about getting a home loan, consult the good people at Leaders Credit Union, because one of the great things about Leaders Credit Union with the home loan and mortgage process, you can get pre-qualified right there on the app. So as soon as you get pre-qualified with your app, you can take your app and you can start making offers on houses, a tremendously convenient tool. They also have an outstanding app in general. You can do all of your banking right there on the mobile app 24/7. Managing your money has never been more convenient because you can review your accounts and balances, you can make the payments, and achieve all of your financial goals. 84,000 members strong at Leaders Credit Union, operating for their benefit. Check out the website specially created for our listeners, leaderscu.com/ESPN, to learn how they can champion your financial story and even waive your membership fee. Let's get into the list. Cedric Coward. All right, Cobb, we got the news yesterday. I don't know if it was a big upset because, George, we knew he was going for basically the fifth spot on the first team all rookie, but it was at least a coin flip.
Yeah, there was some conversation around it.
Because
he did end up missing how many games last year?
That's
15,
the other thing.
20?
He played 62.
Okay.
So obviously you don't have to play 65
to
qualify for that.
Yeah.
All right.
News Cobb, to me.
Fact or fiction? Zach Edey was first team all rookie.
That's fact, right?
It was. I don't really remember that. But yeah. Somehow I remember Jalen Wells. I don't know why I didn't remember Edey.
So it's crazy if you redraft, which my colleague Cam Salerno did about a week ago. Like if you redraft the 2025 draft,
does Castle
Cedric
go
Coward
one?
At six. It's Coward at six.
But where does Castle go? One? Oh, I'm sorry. Last year's draft. Okay. I thought you meant I thought he redrafted the Edey one. I thought that's what you were saying. Because obviously.
If you redrafted 24, like, I mean, well, okay. Now, if you had redrafted 24 after the season, Edey would have gone pretty high. Now that we've seen all the injury concerns come to light, if you redrafted 24 now, he probably goes about where the Grizzlies took him.
Yeah, you could talk me into still, like, I'm curious about this. I think a good reason why Mara's shooting up these draft boards is I think everyone's looking for, like, a man, how do we stop Wimby?
I love it, too, because if teams start going down that path, I think it increases the likelihood that a quality guard is available. Maybe not at 16, but 12, 13, 14, in a level where you could trade more easily if you're Memphis to get there without having to give up. Maybe, you know, if you could trade up and get a guard without having to part with a future first-round pick, that'd be awesome. The way that happens is these teams fall in love with
bigs.
Ade Mara, Merez Johnson, Hans Steinbach, Jaxel Lindeborg. Like, if these guys start creeping up into that category with all the guards, I think that's an ideal scenario for the Grizzlies.
So Cedric becomes the 10th Memphis Grizzly, 12th Grizzly overall to make first team all rookie. So Zach Edey and Jalen Wells last year, Brandon Clark, John Morant in the 1920 season, Jaren in the 18-19 season, Juice, O.J. Mayo, 08-09, Rudy Gay, 06-07, Shane and Powell in the 01 and 02 seasons, Mike Bibby in the 98-99 season, and then Sharif Abdul-Rahim in the 96-97 season. Sixth in last year's draft. So who would he have had in front? So Edgecombe, Cooper, Khan. Who else am I missing?
Harper.
Cooper, Dylan
Harper.
Yeah, Harper. And then he still had Ace Bailey at five in the redraft. And, of course, kind of, I guess, an upset that, like, Ace Bailey isn't on the first team because, I mean, my man played 72 games and, like, I didn't think he was horrible. But Cedric Coward, like, I think he benefits in this voting from the fact that the Grizzlies were in the situation they were in. And, like, he did get a lot of shots down the stretch and he was in a role where he was asked to be more productive than you would have originally anticipated when you thought Ja Morant was going to be a part of it. You thought Jaren Jackson Jr. was going to be a part of it. You didn't necessarily think that the contributions you would get from Zach Edey and Scottie Pippen Jr. and Ty Jerome would be as minimal as they were due to injury. So, like, as it pertains to being first team all NBA, I think history shows us, like, okay, let's look at it like this. All right, some of these guys who are on the second team, like Derek Queen, Jeremiah Fears, Ace Bailey, like, I still think there's a chance they have better careers than Cedric Coward, but it sure feels nice to, for now anyway, to say that.
No,
you know,
that's why I was
hey, trying to.
Well, I was trying
guy.
To figure out if I'm a hater. Mm-hmm. I think of all the postseason awards, this is probably the one I care the least about because it feels like it's so entirely relative. If you're in a great draft class versus in a bad draft class, like unless I know that it got more money in Cedric's pocket, I really don't care. But does that make me a hater?
Yeah, it does. No, who's the guy? Kendrick Nunn. Kendrick Nunn, a few years back, well, 7 or 8 years back now for Miami, he was like first team all rookie, came out of nowhere, was like low key, at least on the fringes of like the rookie of the year conversation. The year when, I think it was Ja's rookie year.
Well, like, think about last year, Sar and Risha Shea, and I mean, they're both on it. I guess Sar had a slightly better year, right? But people are still doing the whole Risha Shea is a bust. Like, what? You know what I mean? Like, I really do not care.
Jalen Wells, first team all rookie a year ago, right? And you know, and so sometimes like it can inspire hope that maybe should be tempered a little bit because when you got the 4 year guys in particular, Cedric Coward, Jalen Wells, Brandon Clark, God rest his soul, right? Like, you know, these guys came into the NBA with multiple years of college experience. They were more ready. They were more ready for the NBA than the one and done guys. But then you see them as first team all rookie and you start, you know, as a Grizzlies fan, you start doing the math in your head. And well, if he's first team all rookie this year, you know, what's he going to be in 3 or 4 years? And I think for Cedric Coward, like there's no doubt, like there's room there. The developmental runway is still long because this guy who didn't play as much college basketball due to injury. But at the same time, like, temper your expectations. Is he already 23? He's at least 22. So,
yeah, I want to say he was drafted at 22, right?
Right. So it's a little different than if he were 18 and had played 1 year of college basketball, right? So I still think he can get better.
He'll be 23 in September. So I think congratulations, you nailed that.
He's got more physical tools than Jalen Wells. So that is a big check mark in his favor. But historically anyway, like being first team all rookie doesn't necessarily mean you're on the fast track to be an all-star.
Well, no, and it's like it's all just entirely relative. Like, think about, like, I love Cedric. He was like one of the few reasons to watch basketball games last year, especially post February. But acting like his rookie year was as explosive and as like eye-popping as Ja's rookie years, not the same thing.
You know who wasn't first-team all-rookie? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Well, didn't he kind of get deep-sixed on the bench on that Clippers team?
Everything about the way the Clippers handled him, it's funny. It's like the Mavs get all the hate, and understandably, like, for the way they handled Luka, because we had a larger body of work when they chose to get rid of Luka. But like, the Clippers deserve, and they get it in some corners at some times, but like, I don't feel like they're as universally lambasted as they should be for failing to capitalize on SGA. I mean, you have a future, like, a repeat MVP in your franchise, and you just let him go. I mean, that's one of the all-time, that's right up there. That's not far off in my mind from what the Mavs did with Luka.
So his rookie season, he averaged.
It was Jaren.
No. Correct, it's Jaren's. He played more than I thought. He got 73 total games. Looks like he's averaging in that 25 plus minutes. Who else on that? So that one would have been Luka, Trey. That would have been
Luka, Trey. Jaren was first team.
Yeah, Jaren was first team. Let's see, because would Bagley have been on it?
And Ayton. Yeah, Bagley and Ayton were first team. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, how did that turn out?
Right. Yeah, and then the next year you had Ja first team, Kendrick Nunn. Right, like that's what I'm talking about. He's in Europe now. He hasn't played meaningful NBA minutes really in years. Zion was first team. Eric Pascal, another guy, was like, well, he played multiple years of college ball, was physically ready for the NBA. So it's just like it's really it can all go right, one.
Hold
ways.
On, I got a toss up for you. Which team is better? Trae Young, Luka, Jaren, Bagley, Ayton versus SGA, Kevin Huerter, Mitchell Robinson, Colin Sexton, and Landry Shamet.
That's the first team in 19 versus the second team, isn't it?
Correct.
That's probably close to a toss-up.
Well, hold on. Nobody on the second team's out of the league. All right, on the first team, you've got Jaren's been player of the year. Luka's been, what, five-time first team All-NBA?
And averaged, what, 30 last year?
But Bagley's...
He's in Washington.
So he's not out of the league.
Mm-mm. Shoot, he played for the Grizzlies last year.
Oh, wow. I forgot about that.
No, I remember that.
How could you forget, Dave?
Because, Cobb, do you not forget the people yelling at us on Twitter that Bagley needed to play in the playoffs over Edie?
No. There's a lot of Grizzlies from the last 7 or 8 years that I've forgotten about.
Who got tossed out? Someone got tossed out the other day. I was like, oh, yeah, that guy did play.
I call it like the Iverson rule. If you played roughly as many games as Allen Iverson did for the Grizzlies, then I've probably
No, this was somebody
you.
That...
Was it recent or...
It would have been in the... last gap year.
Oh, geez.
Because Eric pointed out Jason Collins did play here, but I did.
Yes.
I remembered that. But there, it was like, I want to say it was like in that revolving door of bigs. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
So not Taj.
No, not Taj. Every single one of the guys on the second team is still in the league, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of like low-key surprised when I look up and I see Landry Shamet like playing meaningful playoff basketball. Like, I'm like, whoa, that I just didn't see that happening. Mitchell Robinson like has held on. He's another one of these guys though, where it's like, I think this is a pertinent discussion now with where the Grizzlies stand in this draft is like there are players who as rookies are basically what they're going to be for all of eternity.
Yeah.
And that's like Mitchell Robinson, a useful rim protector sort of guy. Now I know he had some injuries there early in his career, but like he's never been better than he was as a first or a second year guy. And so it's like, when you look at this draft, like who can you select that at least has some 3, 4, 5 year like ability to improve? You know, I mean, that's especially at 16. I just feel like
I think the problem though is like, okay, because I think it's a you bring up a fantastic question, but I think like it's like maybe what are the areas for growth? And it feels like to me, the only real, I guess you could say, all right, well, a guy gets bigger. Okay. And I mean, more mass than I do, like height. Like, I get it. Some guys occasionally.
Jaren grew like an inch, right?
Yeah. I mean, I do know it is not a 0% sum, but really what we're talking about is like getting stronger. All right. Getting stronger, improving your shot. But, like, what are usually, like, the areas for growth?
I think a lot of it is young guys who haven't played a lot of basketball, just who have the physical tools. I think I'm describing Caleb Wilson on a certain level. Like, guys who haven't played a ton of ball.
Have you done so much draft talk that you're back to Wilson?
Well, it got me thinking when in the open we were talking about this idea that maybe some Grizzlies fans feel a sense of hopelessness when they watch San Antonio and they watch OKC and they see how young they are, how good they're going to be for years to come. And then they look at this Grizzly situation and they wonder, how are we ever going to catch up? When you have that discussion, it does bring into focus the allure of going after the high ceiling player. Caleb Wilson, I think, is the high ceiling player. I think he's also got a lower floor than Cam Boozer. And like I said, I am team, hey, just get back to non-play in playoffs. I'm good. Get back to 48 to 50 regular season wins. That sounds amazing right now. But if you're looking for the guy who could become a 5, 6, 7 time all-star, I think Caleb Wilson's that guy. He's young. He's got room to develop as he begins to think the game. He can add the IQ. He can add the outside shot. He can add the facilitation. Like, there's, you know, when you play CFB 26 and you've got the guy who, like, you go and check out his player profile and there's still all these unchecked boxes. Like, that's Caleb Wilson. Well, yeah,
but that's where my football IQ comes in.
You know how to develop it. I mean, so if you feel good about your player development.
So,
like,
I think we're both in the same mind frame. Here would be my difference. I want them to be ultra aggressive to move up from 16. I care less. Like, my whole thing is not every draft is the same. And I know you and I have talked about this a little bit. Not every draft's the same. If this really is the generational draft, I do not care if you spend 2 first-round picks to go up and get the point guard. If you spend 2 additional firsts, I really do not care. If you walk away on Wednesday or whatever, that Tuesday night, and you have Acuff, Cedric, Edie, and Boozer, well, all of a sudden, I am so locked in for the next 5 years.
And Taj Gibson?
And Taj, to really develop him. Coach him up.
Veteran presence.
Yeah.
Real veteran.
Kleiman does not get enough credit for everybody else. Everybody else was like taking their starters off the floor. No. I'll raise you one. Find me a big that's been out of basketball and he's in his 40s.
He's like, is Udonis Haslam available?
Yeah.
No. Okay. Taj Gibson.
I remember him. Get him in there. Like, that was a stroke of genius.
Actually, come to think of it, I guess Kleiman was kind of into that because Taj Gibson, former Bull, Zach Kleiman, a Chicago guy.
Well, Taj is an LA guy, too.
Probably a sentimental attachment there. But
hell, they might have gone to school together.
But my point is, like, if that's your goal, it depends on what your goal is.
Is Zach younger than me?
Kleiman? Yeah, I think he is. Well, I think he's about your age. No, he might be a year or two older than you. Because I'm trying, I think he was 31 Fleming when he took 38 in 2019.
So he's, what year is he? Born in 88 or 87?
Born in 88.
So he's like months older than me. Because I'll be 38 in August. So yeah. And Taj is, yeah, they might have gone to school together.
About the same age.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Jason Smith joins us next. Right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM.
Imagine you're watching the game at a buddy's house when you get a call that someone tried to break into yours. In a second, everything can change. That's why there's ADT. No one wants to feel unsafe in their own home. ADT security systems help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. The ADT Plus app keeps you in control the whole time. ADT's network is built for those game time moments. They have the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. Don't leave your home wide open during an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
The pressure on data centers has never been greater. Whether you're expanding capacity, supporting AI workloads, or building new facilities, Graybar works alongside you with the solutions, specialists, and logistics expertise you need today. We help you power performance every step of the way, so your operation is ready now. Yep, Graybar does that.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain and the letter x.com/AI.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
ESPN. Jason Smith is the co-host of the J&J Show. Start your day every weekday with J&J from 9 a.m. until noon. He's on the Everything app at Jason Smith 929. Jason, do you find yourself getting depressed when you watch the Western Conference Finals?
Yeah. I mean, thinking about how long this is going to go on and looking at how young those teams are. I think when Harper was in the starting lineup, Hembo's stat was at 22.9 years old, average age. It was the youngest starting lineup.
Did you see that, George? Did you hand Jason the stat? Granted, there's some guys that have to get eligible, but Will Wade's projected starting five next year would be significantly older than the Spurs starting five.
No question about it. No question about it. And these teams are already at a point of all in and contender. Just in terms of being able to be a contender right now. I mean, you wouldn't even say that San Antonio's all in terms of what it's paying these guys. So they're so far ahead of you, and they seem to have such a bright future. We once thought we were sort of in the same boat at one point, and my, how that's changed. What I will say is that if you are down the dumps, it's easy to get down, thinking about how much ground you've got to make up to get to where those franchises are. Just go read what Cobb touched on earlier. You guys have talked about it. You know, go read Bobby Marks's piece about how right now the Grizzlies, obviously OKC still is too, but are the envy of the league in terms of the set of assets they've got to now go acquire a new, you know, add to Cedric Coward, first all-NBA first-teamer. Well, all-rookie first-teamer. We hope one day he's all-NBA first-teamer. Add Zach Edey and go out and find you some more pieces. You clearly found one in Cedric Coward at 11 last year. You know, you jumped from 16. So you ask yourself, you guys were just talking about it, can you at least do that again? The price will certainly be higher, you think, than last year when it was a first and 2 second rounders to go from 16 to 11. But you do anything like that, you figure you're going to come away with hopefully, you know, a player that's got certainly that all rookie potential, but more importantly, you know, maybe one, you know, Jeffrey, we talked about it maybe even being more aggressive last week, right? Trying to use, a ton of these picks, the bulk of these picks to go up into the, you know, back in and get you that lead guard that maybe you thought you were going to get at 6, 7, 8 before the draft lottery. But my point is what you can focus on if you are down in the dumps that is that at least the Grizzlies have the bag of assets to tell yourself, well, if you get this right, if we get this right in the draft, if we're aggressive enough, because I think Zach's going to have to be, but that's what he does. We can get back to a point where we're at least contending for a play-in and maybe very quickly back in the playoffs and maybe approaching where those guys are. I mean, if you want to look at the ground that you've got to make up, you're going to be depressed. You're going to be down. But if you look at what you've got to do it with, then I think that's where things can be a little sunnier.
Is it weak, Jason, to just totally recalibrate what success is for the Grizzlies in light of how dominant and how young OKC and San Antonio are? Is it a loser mentality for me to sit here and say, well, maybe we just be content with being top six in the West at some point in the next 5 years and set that as the bar? Because that's different than what it was 3 years ago when we had these illusions of grandeur with Ja, Dez, and Jaren. We were setting the bar at, hey, let's make a finals, right? Like,
how many finals are we going to make?
Right. Well, am I being a defeatist by saying we got to recalibrate?
No, I don't think you're being a defeatist. I mean, they're look at how much we look back on that grit and grind era and what we pulled from that. It ended up in one Western Conference Finals run. But for, you know, you look back at that time and, yeah, you'd like it to be more. You'd like to make the trips to the finals. But if you are contending and you felt like you were there for a couple of years, you know, 2, 3 years with that team and that core, then I think there is a satisfaction in that. I would just say where you can't be defeatist is at least the charge that it's got to get back quickly, right? You were at a point, and sure, we can put a lot of this at the feet of Ja Morant and his inavailability and, you know, some of the other issues you've had with players, but and mainly that's Ja. But you were right there as a 2 seed, and very quickly you were off of it. And a lot of that, you know, you can go back to the coaching decision, Taylor Jenkins bringing in Isolo. So some of that's on front office. What I'm getting at, Cobb, is that there has to be an accountability factor. Zach Kleiman came out and said it even, that you can't just be, you know, down in the dumps playing status for 5 years. This rebuild's got to be quick. And when we think about what you're rebuilding back to, sure, maybe just to the level you're talking about where it's top six is satisfactory enough, as bad as it is right now, but it's got to be quickly, right? And there needs to be a hope in there that with what you've got that you know, you can call yourself a contender, I think. Right now, yeah, getting back to a playoff level, a top six will get people excited again. But at some point, you know, you're going to be able to tell yourself you can get to a Western Conference Finals. I know looking at this, it almost seems like a silly conversation right now with what you've got, you know, compared to OKC and the Thunder. They're not going anywhere. And frankly, you know, OKC has still the flexibility to just rotate these guys out, take Hartenstein off. Cobb, you were pointing to it. It's team options on these guys. And so they'll pay that core of Chet, SGA, and Jalen Williams and be able to, you know, draft a Yoxo Lindeborg to replace Hartenstein. So they're really not going anywhere. But back to that point. So Cobb, it may be the reality that ultimately you're going to have to be at best 4 or 5 in the West. Maybe it's 3 at some point. But, you know, building back to that quickly, I think, is where you have to still be, okay, well, this has got to, you know, there has to still be some accountability. There has to be some, you know, let's fight. Let's get back at least, you know. Can't just sit back and, well, yeah, hopefully in 3, 4, 5 years. Zach knows that's why he came out and said it afterwards, said it himself that this can't be a 5-year. So, you know, the clock is on, Zach, to get you back to a, to whatever status, you know, is satisfactory enough for all of us.
I don't even necessarily, I don't think it's like loser talk, Cobb. And Jason, tell me if you agree. It's like when circumstances change, you have to like recalibrate. Well, I mean, if we're talking after the 2022 season and we would have said, hey, the expectations just make the top six. Right. Well, that's the problem. It's like you were one of the worst teams in basketball after you traded everybody last year. If I sit there and say in the next, you know, 24 months, I'd like to see you fighting for the top six. Well, like the timeline's changed. And so I think the other thing that I struggle with is I really do value being good. And I know I think in the NBA more than any sport, it feels like if you're not a true title contender, you need not apply. You should blow it up. And yeah. I just don't fundamentally believe in that because I think there's value in being good. I think that's a lot of nights in the building. I think that's a lot of money. And I also think like you never know how the season plays out. Like what we're also seeing is these playoffs, the last 5 or 6 years have been entirely defined by pretty significant injuries. And who knows, maybe this one will be no different. And you don't know if maybe it's your year to get injury luck. But that's kind of my point is like, I would like to see the emphasis on let's build a good team. And I don't necessarily care. Like if you tell me the big swing is Caleb Wilson at 3, I'd rather not do that. I'd rather give me the good player. But if you want to take the swing, spend those draft picks and get me Acuff. And now all of a sudden I'm like, okay, like I'm cool being aggressive that way. But like, I do think the key part for right now is like the Grizzlies need more good players. But I don't think it's like that far off.
Yeah, no, I mean, if Edie is going to remain healthy.
Yes, well, that is a hell, yes, you are 100% right on that.
This could very quickly all fall apart. Like, they've put a great deal of belief in Zach Edie playing a level of basketball. Really, it should be a speed of basketball that he did not play in college, what they're asking him to do. You know, whether that's going to have to include him slimming down. I mean, clearly, you know, Wembanyama this offseason we saw went and worked on his body with the Monks. I don't know what that looks like in terms of what you can do with Zach Edie, but there has to be a real focus on trying to maximize, you know, the potential of that body, whether it's got to be sleeker or whatever else, because you're asking it to play in a league that's as fast paced as it's ever been. And so back to the point, like there's a lot of belief just in Zach Edie. You can say there's a lot, you can say there's still plenty there. If you look at it through the prism of there's three first team, all rookie guys there. Let's not, you know, not include Jalen Wells as a part of that. But we also look at Jalen Wells as probably a guy who should be a rotational piece, a guy coming off the bench. And if he's that, and Zach Edey is not going to be healthy and in the middle for you, Zach Edey, who we've said, you know, who works with him real well, Cameron Boozer. Like if that falls apart for you, you are in a spot where it's like, what have you done here? And there was a point there where, again, you know, it looked like it had been reported that at least the first option, the first guy that you wanted was Donovan Kling in there. So I will just say there's still a way if you, you know, can envision a world where Zach Edey's ankle just can't take it, what he's being asked to do. Look at these guys. I mean, Wimby, he's 7'4". I know John brought up the fact, and I think others have dug it up too now, that Edey's 3-0 against him. A lot of that's coming early in Wimby's career. But you look at what Wimby's becoming and what you're going to have to ask of Zach to like keep up like with that. Is he going to be able to move the way he needs to move? And sure, you're going to need team defense. One guy can't stop Wimby. But look at the battle with Hartenstein last night. I mean, Hartenstein was responsible. I realize that, and I'm taking you away, totally away from the question, but he completely changed Wimby's game from 1 to 2 in the sense that, you know, 23 of Wimby's 25 shots in the first game came inside the arc. I think he took 9. I think 7 of them were threes last night. 9 inside the arc and only got to the free throw line twice. But look at the wrestling match that was going on. And it wasn't just, hey, strength up top. Like Hartenstein's got to be able to move. And so whoever that guy is in there, you know, asking Zach Edey to be that guy and to do it long term, I think is asking an awful lot based on what we've seen early in his NBA career. in terms of issues. So, now, Jeffrey, yes, what you're saying, good sounds absolutely like freaking, what are we talking about? Like a five-star restaurant right now. So I'm not going to argue against that. But you were good for two seasons, certainly. And I think ultimately it becomes this for every GM, right? Sure, the fans can be happy with good. You can tell yourself a contender whether you are or whether you aren't. But every GM at some point, Zach Kleiman's been there. He's had it at good. You try to get it from good to great, like from good to true contender. Sure, we'll all be satisfied, especially right now as hungry as we are, with good. But I think every GM worth his salt has to figure out how to get it over the hump. Zach, especially now with the way the apron is and what you're paying these guys. You tell yourself, well, if I'm going to go into an apron or pay maxes to all these guys, I've got to truly be contending for a championship. And so, for those reasons, that's another discussion on how you get there for another day from that good to great. Right now, we got a long road back to good, and especially if Zach Edey doesn't hold up.
Jason, I want to switch gears for a moment here with you and get your take on some of the things Charles Huff has been saying. He's been doing the rounds with media, and the one thing that stands out to me is the level of vision casting and the long-term understanding of what this program needs. Like, for example, with Matt Enfield on Channel 5, he did this one-on-one, and he goes, no, the next step is, how do we win the conference? How do we get into the playoffs? How do we transition into a Power Four conference? And once we get to that conference, how do we become competitive? And my takeaway from these last couple of interviews that I've seen with Charles Huff is that he gets it. He understands what the mission is at Memphis. It's not just to win the next week, it's to win the next 5 to 6 years. And I'm wondering how that's resonating with you and kind of what your thoughts are on his ability to at least understand and wrap his arms around what the big picture mission is around Memphis football.
Well, I'm glad you asked. I've really enjoyed listening to him, whether it's all these different talking points. I like the way you put it, his vision, him talking about closing the gap and based on touching on what you just hit, understanding that right now for Memphis, it's critically important that you're not just winning 9-10 games, which is what, listen, Ryan Silverfield was doing a good job at, frankly, that he bankrolled into an Arkansas job, such a good job at, but that closing the gap, making American championships, realizing how important that is right now ahead of a time where, you're hoping at some point in the next 5 years that you can move out of the American to another conference. Like he hits on all those points, even speaks it as a directive from the president. I think it's different coming from Charles in this sense, Cobb. This is why I find it interesting and why, just about everything right now I'm listening to is because unlike Silverfield, who had not been a head coach, he'd watched others do it. Unlike Puente, to that degree, Huff has built programs. We've seen him do it before. And you're coming to a spot where you have the most resources that you've ever had. But what I've been listening to is the builder part, the vision part. Like you're talking about, Huff saying he's got to come in, he's got 71 new guys, he's got to establish what time he comes to work so they know when he's in the office, what time everything is. You got to do it quickly. And here's the thing that's not the case with Heartline down in South Florida right now, wasn't the case with Silverfield, is like he's learned this from Saban and then applied it at Marshall and then applied it at Southern Miss, and you've seen the building right away. You've seen the improvement right away. And so you get a guy that understands it, Cobb, understands Memphis's mission right now and has adopted that as his own in terms of, I got to get football hot so we can get this, get this school to a new conference. He understands the mission, but it's coming from someone who's built programs before and now has more with this $10 million. I think that he's pretty much told people he's got in terms of on the football side right now, he's got more than he's ever had. And so it's more interesting to me the vision that he's got for Memphis right now, that I think coming out of his mouth than it was even previously for guys who they could give you the vision, but they hadn't done it before. Memphis was the first stop in terms of head coaching and everything else. And so that's why I think I'm eager to see it all sort of come together on the field. He's hitting, right now too, Cobb, I mean, you want your football coach to sell the program when you've got a newly renovated stadium. You want football to be the talk, right? In a basketball town. That's been hard to do. Mike Norvell was a guy that was pretty darn good at it. Others have struggled with that. Silverfield wasn't great in terms of selling the program. He'd sell the wins that the program had, but in terms of being interesting and being out there. And a lot of that, let's just be, Cobb, you've covered a bunch of these guys. a lot of them at the start, right, are out there and everything else. And I imagine Silverfield probably was very early on, but in the end, you know, he let the program sell itself in terms of the wins and everything else. Charles is coming in here. Coach Huff is coming in here. He understands the mission. He's selling it immediately at a time you need butts and seats in this new stadium, trying to build excitement. And, yeah, man, that's the thing I think that excites me the most, Cobb, is that we've seen him do it. Even at Southern Miss last year, it was a six-game improvement from the year before. And bowl eligibility for the first time, what, since 22. And so he was starting the process there very quickly. And now armed with the most he's ever had, you know, feeling like he's got a wealth of resources because of the lower levels he's come from and built there, I'm excited to see what he's going to do with it, to see how this looks on the field. And it feels like to me, in what is a wide-open American, you maybe have an edge, Cobb, because unlike Hartline, who's got more than you in terms of money and roster, it sounds like, you've done this before in terms of building it. So his vision's been one that's come together before, is the way I would bottom line it. I'm excited to see how it comes together here.
All right, last thing before we let you go. Along those other comments that Charles Huff made, he also included that the plan for the school is to be in a Power Four conference by 2028. Obviously, it's a plan, it's a talking point, whatnot, but what was your reaction when you heard it said out loud?
I love the drive, love that, you know, it's a stated mission to get into a power conference. You know, around here, you're sort of held to timelines. My partner talked about, Paul Young, talking about the lease that he hoped to get done last summer, and that came and went. So, and you look at that timeline, well, everything that, and Jeffrey, I heard you talking this through, and everything we talked about sort of jived, I think, with what you said, is that timeline, you know, folks have talked about everything blowing up in 2030 when the media rights deals are up. And maybe it all happened sooner than that, but I think Jonah Dillon made a good point too, that jives with what we're saying. 28 seems awfully early, and especially to be in the new conference.
Yeah.
And especially if it's just you. If it's just you, like you did with the Big 12, right, going out on your own, as opposed to a reaction, right? So a conference coming apart and you're part of a new crew going in. Well, that hasn't worked. And so that, I wonder if it was necessary. And again, you're trying to get people excited, and this one's 2 years away, so you can put it to bed for a little bit before people are in a couple of years like, oh, hey, Huff was wrong about this. But back to the point, I just wonder if that's a little early. The talks with everything blowing up in 2030, my whole thing was, sure, those talks would begin and probably will before then, but by 28, maybe it's hot and heavy, but not moving in that early. I had never envisioned it happening that soon. I hope that's one he can speak into existence, but that seemed a little early, and especially if this is just a Memphis push, if nothing has blown up by that point.
Jason, we really appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
Y'all take care. Yep.
Jason Smith of the J&J Show. Start your day with J&J right here on 92.9 FM ESPN from 9 until noon. Let's talk about that expansion, that very topic, and a couple of other things. Also, Cobb, you seen who's at the top of the leaderboard today?
Rixie.
Let's talk about what that actually looks like. Now, granted, there's a lot more golf to be played at a pillow fight. Yeah, that is going to be a birdie fest, and that's not really Brooks' style, but I want to get into that as well as a few other topics from the world of sports. But let's talk about whether or not how realistic 2028 would be for Memphis to jump up. Let's talk about that next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
When it comes to lighting, Graybar goes beyond parts and products. We help contractors turn plans into smart designs, manage kitting and deliverables, and navigate local codes so you can stay on time and on budget. Smart, scalable, job site ready. That's not just lighting. That's like kicking your project into Graybar mode. Yep, Graybar does that.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain in the letter x.com/AI.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
I'm Dr. Hrini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Banner civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.